Welcome to Everything in Between, the podcast where a dad and daughter duo delve deep into topics ranging from true crime to paranormal occurrences to urban legends and, well, everything in between. I'm Emma.
I'm the dad.
That's Anish.
We're back.
Yes, we are back. We took a little mini break last week because things got crazy.
I think. And it was the same thing. We did this exactly a year ago too. We took the break.
The busiest time of the year.
Well, I think it's just that week of 4th of July that we just were running around, and then we went up to Maine and we had friends up again, and that was awesome. And I think we had more fun outside. Well, I shouldn't say me. You.
Yes.
Emma played a sport.
I did badminton.
She played a sport.
I know. It's really
more
shocking.
Than once.
I'm sure about half of our
more
listeners are like
than
fainted right now.
Once. It yes. was awesome. It was fun. And I believe she'll do it again.
I will do it again because it was fun.
Okay. Maybe we should just stop today.
Anyway, that was fun.
What? You said it was fun?
That's the second time. I already
recorded.
Said that.
This is yeah, not for
It's fun
perpetuity.
To play it with my friends.
Fine by me.
I'm not doing it competitively. I'm not joining any badminton teams anytime soon.
Oh my God.
It's not happening. Yeah, but it was just very hectic because for me last week, I started two things, like classes. I started my first official college class. So I am officially a college student taking college classes. And then I also started my course that I'm teaching to kids about writing, which is super fun. And it's super exciting to see all the kids like super passionate about. Oh, it's so great.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so it was a little hectic. So we were not able to record or release an episode last week. But we're back now.
Yeah, but I think we are looking for a hiatus because come August, you're going to start to get, you have to start packing up. Because right now, I mean.
Yeah.
So, assuming nothing changes, you'll be on campus by the third week?
Yeah, I think the 24th.
Yeah, so I think we just have to judge that way. So even if we have a hiatus, that doesn't mean that there won't be future episodes here or there, special ones there and there, maybe over the holidays or something.
I think right now what we're planning is our last episode before our hiatus will probably be the last week of July.
I think we're going to try to just play it by ear to see what happens. Yeah. So we thank everyone now, just in case something changes or something goes crazy. Yeah. But again, we're not saying it's over. We're just saying that, a pause.
Yes, just a little pause.
But again, when that pause happens,
yeah, very true. Yeah, so we watched, I think, a lot of movies recently. I don't remember if we watched any up in Maine that...
Well, you guys... Knew. Yeah. What?
I can't remember.
Really? You can't remember...
We watched a lot of things.
Oh my
you know
God.
Me, my memory is
oh my
not
God.
Good.
Oh my God.
We watched I don't remember. That was like ages ago.
Well, why don't you do with the things you do remember and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, the other night I watched Poltergeist with my friends. It's for the second time for me, but they put it on Netflix, so we decided that we might as well watch it. And I was very excited because one of my friends hates horror movies with a passion, refuses to see any, self-proclaimed wuss. And she finally agreed to watch this one horror movie with us. And I think she liked it. I don't think it was...
That's good.
It's a little bit dated. So.
Well, it's understandable, but it's not something that people want to say they super enjoy. I think there's a difference about how you enjoy it and... it's just a different mindset. So I don't fault people who don't want to see horror films because I get it. It's as me watching a period drama.
Oh my God.
There we go.
Anyway, then we watched, or on the same night, you and mom watched The Old Guard.
Yeah, we renamed our, we have our own little text group called Don DeTino Old Guard.
Oh my God.
And it was the adults. It was actually really cool for the adults to watch a movie and not have to worry about people on their devices or talking through a movie. And I was like, wow, this is what it was before kids.
Wow, in the old days, when I was a kid.
So we're going to, we'll probably do it again. Maybe we'll make this, yeah. So it was okay. Actually kind of awesome.
All right. All righty.
I'm just saying. It was just very enjoyable.
Yikes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I'm sure.
So we saw The Old Guard and highly recommend. I have not read the graphic novel. I think it was well done. I believe it's going to be a series or a franchise, I should say, I think. Everyone in it was great. So, and it's not your typical comic book type action film. I felt that the characters were developed, not all, but the main characters. You get a good feeling from where they're coming from and everything like that. So if you haven't seen it, watch it.
Cool.
And speaking of the comic book movies, we did watch Dark Knight.
Oh, that's what it was.
No, that's not what it was. But we watched Dark Knight because you needed to get your Heath Ledger fix,
Of course. I mean, obviously.
Yeah. Well, anyway. But it was good because it's graphic novel. Well, yeah, Batman. But it's just a great movie.
Yes. I really enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. Especially the parts where Heath Ledger was in it.
All right. Whatever.
Yeah. I don't remember. What was the other one then?
Volcano Man.
Oh!
I don't understand how your mind works.
It really just slipped my mind.
I don't even understand. I mean, I don't get it.
I guess maybe I thought we had already talked about it or something. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Anyway, we watched, again on Netflix, Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga, which is amazing. I don't know how I forgot it. It's just so good.
It's a film that you're either going to love or you're going to hate it. I don't think there's no gray area for that one. Well, no, I thought it was great.
Oh, yeah.
But I just think that there are going to be some people who are going to just be like, yeah, this is ridiculously stupid, but
so
the music is hysterical.
Like, I would listen to that music independently.
Well, I mean, I think it's a fad type thing. I think you get the kick out of it. I think it would get tiresome pretty fast listening to it.
But it still sounds so funny.
It's a good movie. It's well done. And I feel like Will Ferrell's had a couple of misses recently, so this is kind of good for him. And I was never a fan of Rachel McAdams, but she...
You weren't?
I don't know what it was about her, but I like her in the comedic roles, I guess. But she was... She, without her, this film is not, it needs her. It really does. So, yeah. I mean, Will Ferrell is his typical Will Ferrell self, but Rachel McAdams, she just holds her own. So, I'm assuming most people have seen it already because it was like the number one Netflix thing for a while.
It's so good. Yeah. Would recommend.
And we just, before we started, just to, you know, get in the mood for the pod, we watched the second episode of...
I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
Yes.
Which is really good and intense and spooky, but informative.
Yeah, I guess we'll try to watch the third one just to get caught up soon. Mm-hmm. And I think it's 6 episodes.
I believe I heard something about that.
But I know we talked about this in the past, and we watched the, I don't know, I want to say Investigation Discovery, or I don't even know what channel it was
on.
Yeah,
I remember when we talked about that on the podcast.
But we were just saying in the second episode, it's a lot more gritty and I don't know. I mean, we know everything about the... Well, I shouldn't say we know everything about the case, but we know a lot about the case. We know the outcome and all these other things. But it's like the way when they're talking to all the victims, and I think that's the other aspect of it, is that you can tell... Some of them you're just amazed on how strong they are. And then the others you understand how they're still suffering with the trauma and how they deal with it. Like the one woman who just, you know, she was kind of like she was just giggly throughout. And I think that's just how she copes. Right. Ways, yeah. But the one woman that I think it was victim 33, you're just like, this woman is tough.
Very strong.
And then watching we only saw the one guy, right? We didn't get to see the other husbands. But the one husband, the victim, it's weird because you can see how it affects him and you don't have, I mean, again, I don't, it's not like I don't have sympathy for him, but you're in a way, I'm even more angry because I don't know how to say
it. No, I know how you're feeling. You kind of have to watch it to like,
yeah. Cause it's not like you want to be angry at him. Cause it's just, but it's a weird thing because just the way the men coped with it and how they deal with it. It's just, I can't relate, nor do I ever want to have to relate, but yeah. But it was, yeah, I guess it did get us in the mood because it's so dark.
Yeah. Anyway, that was a little depressing. But then, I don't know if I should go with the next depressing thing or with the lighter
before we
thing.
Should say, like, it's early morning, so this was our breakfast show. That's what we decided to do last night. It was like, hey, let's have breakfast and watch this episode. And
yeah, because you're an old man and you wanted to go to bed.
That is true.
It was like 10:30.
Can confirm.
Like, we can watch it. It's only an hour. And you were like, oh, but I have to get sleep. Gosh.
Yeah.
Would have been over at 11:30. Mm-hmm. Would have been fine. Okay. Anyway, I'll go with the dark one first so we can end on a lighter note before you go into your Liverpool spiel. But we watched the new Unsolved Mysteries. We watched the first two episodes of that, which was super interesting, I think. And a little bit anger-inducing, especially in that second one.
Well, I think we don't get to... because we've seen so many others or read books and all these other things, you know that they're just leaving out so much because they do a lot of leaps on things. And I mean, how they edit it. So I think the biggest thing is that... sorry about that. My mom just FaceTimed me. So we were talking about...
Unsolved Mysteries.
Right.
And them making leaps.
Yeah. So I think that's the way they edit it and everything like that. But I think the other part of it is that you watched the old ones, right?
Nope.
You haven't. All right. So there was a guy who was kind of the narrator in a way. His name was Robert Stack. He's the one in the trench coat that you see the picture of.
I think I watched the intro to one and that was about it.
And I think I like how they do this one where it's just...
They just tell the story.
Like, there's no... there's no commercials and all these other things. But yeah, I think I understand your point about the angry part and just watching how police work goes through and all these other things. And you can't blame everyone in this. Like, you can't... I'm not going to blame the authorities for all the stuff that they didn't or did do. But I don't know. I just feel like the way they edit it makes you want to... They edit it on purpose. They manipulate. So I don't know what to believe without knowing all the detail. But it's good. It's worth seeing. And we'll watch the rest of the series because, you know, true crime.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very excited. Apparently, I was talking to someone who watched it. And there's allegedly one episode has to do with aliens, which I'm so excited for. I love, like, the weird, really, like, creepy, weird ones. Like, I don't know why.
I mean... Yeah, that doesn't excite me. I mean,
I know you don't like aliens, but I just
I don't like aliens. I just I don't know. Whatever.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
And then to end it on a higher note, we watched Best in Show, which was on Hulu, I think.
Yeah, all those mockumentaries by the little ensemble.
That was funny.
Is there so Best in Show for your consideration? Waiting for Guffman and A Mighty Wind are, I think, the four. I don't know if there was others. I don't think Spinal Tap was the first, but that's not with everyone. But if you haven't seen, this was kind of the beginning of the whole mockumentary thing. So, you know, there's no Office. There's no Parks and Rec. This whole way of showing, you know, a storyline, this, I think, put it front and center. I mean, I'm not saying there weren't other shorts like it, but this was the beginning. And the cast is awesome. So if you like Schitt's Creek, you should watch this.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Then do you want to talk about Liverpool?
Well, I mean, the season, like, they've won. They broke the record for, you know, winning the title earlier than any other team. Now the problem is it's weird because I think there's only three games left. They could try to break the record for most points, biggest margin of victory, that kind of thing. But it's weird because I think they tied this past week and they could have broken a record of winning every game at home. It hasn't happened since the beginning of the English league. And they tied, and it's a two-edged sword, I guess, or double-edged sword, I should say, because it felt like a loss when they tied, but you could tell how angry they are. So I'm happy about that because it's not as if they're phoning it in. I mean, they want, I don't know if the records mean much in the end, but there is a pride to play. And then the season starts right away again because we're so delayed that come September, the next season starts. So there is this aspect of you got to keep the passion, the hunger and everything because it's a quick turnaround. So, hey, they're the champions of England. They get to raise the cup at their last home game, which is a Saturday. They play again this Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there's one more game after that. Well, there's three games. So if they win the next three out, they will break the record for most points in a season. Will they do it? I don't know. I feel like they've won it. I feel like there is this aspect where they're kind of like, I don't want to hurt myself, like kind of thing. But Jordan Henderson, their captain, got hurt a couple games back, and bad. But he should be fine for next season. So I'm psyched. We're happy. Can't wait to see them raise the trophy.
Cool. Well, I'm gonna do a paranormal story, and you're doing true crime.
I am doing true crime. Yeah.
Cool. So let's jump into it.
Okay.
Okay. So, I'm going to start with my sources, and you're going to know right away where this takes place, but that's fine. So, my first source is Avenue Calgary.
Okay.
The lineup, of course. A blog by this guy. I don't know if it's his name or if it's just the blog name. Hammerson Peters. Haunted Rooms, DKI Canada. And a blog from Taxi Mike.
Oh, okay.
So, get ready. In case you didn't realize from my sources, we are going to Canada today.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've done like a good like ghost story, I feel like. So today I'm bringing you to the super haunted Fairmont Banff Springs Hotel.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard of it. Maybe.
I don't think so.
You might have once we get into it a little bit.
Okay.
It's pretty famous. Okay. So the hotel was built in Alberta, Canada in 1888, you know, the year of the Ripper murders. it was originally like all wooden structure and all of that. And at this time, the Canadian Pacific Railway was being extended to the west, and the need for a, quote, high-class hotel grew. Because lots of people were now traveling to this area.
Right.
So that's how the hotel came to be.
Okay.
The hotel boasts, quote, breathtaking mountain scenery and natural hot springs, making it more than a stop-off point. According to the vice president of the railway, the hotel would be a, quote, world-class travel destination.
Okay.
So very highbrow.
All right.
However, it did become a world-class pretty much travel destination. But in 1926, a fire broke out, which damaged the building almost to like the point of complete destruction. Since again, it was all wood. It was pretty bad. They had to pretty much like completely remodel and rebuild the hotel. And this time they made it out of like pretty much just stone.
Mm-hmm.
And they modeled it after Scottish castles.
Nice.
Now it kind of looks like a castle.
Cool.
And after this, the hotel just sort of gained a little bit more fame because it now looked so regal.
Yeah.
And a lot of celebrities started visiting it. So you've got Marilyn Monroe, Helen Keller, Winston Churchill, and Queen Elizabeth II.
Okay.
So lots of good company, except for Winston Churchill. And I think Helen Keller was racist too. So let's go past that. So this led to it being nicknamed the Castle of the Rockies.
Oh, cool.
So it's got that cool little name. Currently the hotel has 768 guest rooms.
Wow.
And it has various activities such as, quote, cross-country skiing, dog sledding, snowshoeing, skating, 27 hole championship golf course, whatever that means, hiking, fishing, river rafting, horseback riding, and more. They've got a spa, multiple restaurants. So basically, it looks like I will not be staying there anytime soon.
Yeah. Well, no badminton, so I guess.
Yeah, that's so true. Oh, that's a deal breaker for me. So anyway, it's very, very fancy. But besides all this sort of high class accommodation type stuff it's got, it's also home to a lot of ghosts.
Okay.
So our first kind of little creepy thing is the secret room. So remember that fire in 1926?
Yeah.
When people were going through the hotel in the aftermath and like rebuilding and looking through it and stuff, they discovered that there was a secret room that had been damaged by the fire that nobody knew existed, but had been built back in 1888.
Okay.
They didn't know much about like if it was used for anything, but it had no windows or doors, and it had just been under the radar. Like, not even the owners knew about it. And yeah, it was just completely, like, there was just no explanation.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they changed it in any way when they rebuilt it, but it said that apparitions are often seen by guests that are like wandering the halls near this room, but no one knows who they are or why they're there.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know if that room still exists or if it's like bricked up or whatever, but whatever, it's there are ghosts.
Either way, wherever that, in the vicinity of where it could have been and where it is now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. In that general area. One of the more helpful ghosts in the hotel is a man named Sam McCauley. He was a bellman at the hotel during the 60s and 70s, and he was said to love his job so much and so passionately that he never left.
Fair.
Yeah. So he died around May of 1975. There are varying accounts, like different ways that people spell his name and like when he died and all that. But generally, it's believed 1975. But guests today will find themselves being helped by a man in a 1960s bellhop uniform.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. He's been known to unlock rooms for guests, turn on room lights, or even help carry bags.
Oh, wow.
On one occasion, two elderly women, quote, called the bell desk for assistance after they found that their key would not work. The bellman at the desk was busy somewhere else, and when he responded to the call 15 minutes later, he found that the door had already been unlocked. And the women told him that an older bellman in a plaid jacket had helped them out and unlocked the door. And that description matched Sam's appearance.
All right, cool.
So he is a pretty friendly guy. Often he's spotted on the 9th floor. Guests feel cold spots on the 6th, 7th, and 9th floors, and those are thought to be him.
Hmm.
And Sam's old office has now been turned into a guest room, and then visitors in that guest room will see him kind of like wandering around there as if he's still in his office, chilling, pretty much.
Yeah, they should just left that room alone then.
Yeah, they should have. If you attempt to tip Sam or start a conversation with him, he will vanish.
Huh.
So he's just kind of like, you know, helping people around.
Yep.
There's also the ghost of a bartender who has been witnessed by both staff and guests. He will appear to drunk visitors and inform them that, quote, quote, they have drunk a little too much and perhaps it's best if they go to bed.
Gotcha.
And there's also, this one has like pretty much no explanation whatsoever, but several people have seen the apparition of a headless man around the hotel who somehow is able to play the bagpipes that he carries with him. So I don't know about his story, but he's just seen around the hotel.
Well, they seem all friendly.
Yeah, so far. one of the most haunted rooms in the hotel is room 873.
Okay.
According to legend, a family was staying there when the father lost his mind and murdered his wife and daughter before killing himself. Very sad. And guests who have stayed there would report hearing shrieks and screams in the middle of the night.
Hmm.
Also, cleaning crews would discover bloody handprints on the bathroom mirror that would resist all attempts to clean them off.
That's getting messed up.
Yeah. And it seems like they just disappear by themselves.
You'd figure Sam would take care of this.
Yeah, you know? But they disappear by themselves, and then they would reappear like several days later. The activity in that room actually got so bad and so, like, it happened so often that they ended up sealing it off. And so now no one is permitted inside or to stay there.
Except,
are you thinking Zach Bagans? I don't know, actually. I didn't look that up. Gotcha. I'm sure he's been there. I'm sure. I'm positive.
All right.
So the ghosts are said to still kind of haunt that surrounding area.
Okay.
And the hotel claims that there are no ghosts at all, by the way. They're like, no, there's no ghosts here. And they claim that they block the room off for renovations. But, I mean, it's ghosts.
You think you just put a camera in there and keep it on at all times. But whatever.
Yeah, well. Anyway, with most haunted hotels, you will find stories of abandoned brides who met their end on or right before their wedding day. And the Fairmont Banff Springs is no different.
Okay.
However, their ghostly bride is so famous that she actually has her own postage stamp and a collector coin in Canada. So she's, you know, top-notch ghost. So according to the legend, she and her soon-to-be husband had arranged to hold their wedding banquet in the hotel. And as the bride was walking up this, like, elegant staircase to her awaiting husband, her dress brushed against one of the candles lining the stairs. Oof. And caught fire. And in a panic, she tripped over her dress and fell backwards down the stairs, breaking her neck and dying.
Oh, boy.
Which is very sad.
Yeah.
So it's kind of disputed whether, like, which staircase this was. I was reading on one of the blogs, a guy was saying that he used to work there, and the actual staircase where it happened, it doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
They, like, got rid of it when they were doing renovations.
Mm-hmm.
But other people think that there's a still existing, like, marble staircase that was the actual staircase. So it's not really known. But people have seen her ghost in the hotel. Hotel guests and staff have spotted her dancing alone in the Cascade Ballroom. And some have claimed to see her climbing that marble staircase.
All right.
Just sort of like by herself. She had been staying in the hotel's bridal suite. And staff members have heard strange noises coming from the room when no one is there.
Okay.
People often report the sounds of laughter, crying, and screaming from around that area. And employees, like I was saying, are told not to tell anyone about, like, ghosts. They're like, no ghosts here.
All right.
So, yeah.
Well, at least they're not trying to make a buck on that, so that's cool.
That's true. So I also got a couple, like, guest accounts from that blog, Taxi Mike.
Yep.
Of some experiences that I feel like we should read, you know. So the first one, they're all quotes, so the first one is... I worked two summers at the hotel in 79 to 80. A veteran housekeeper told me she had seen a wandering bride go in and out of vacant rooms on many occasions. A waiter told me he had seen chairs moving in the dining room by themselves. I recall one night walking through an employee tunnel and hearing steps behind me, but no one was there. And that's from Dan.
Okay.
I didn't know that there were employee tunnels. I wonder, what is, like, is that just, like...
Well, I mean, it could be when they, well, tunnel, if it's where they, for service to basically not be, if they're, I don't know where the kitchen is, but if they're trying to get in between places so you're not, you know, in the bustle of all the people. So right. The lobby and everything else, so.
Cool. Well, anyway, that's pretty spooky. This next account is from Amanda. We were the only people staying on our floor. Because, like, there's, like, kind of, like, a small mini floor that only has, like, four rooms. So, okay. They were staying on that floor, and they were the only ones. Both of the nights we stayed, all night long, every few minutes, there was a distinct sound of someone trying the door and finding it locked.
Okay. Well, that's unsettling.
Yeah. And so she said that, like, the only people they saw on that floor was, like, a cleaning crew, and it doesn't really make sense.
Right. Why would you try over and over again?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's not...
Plus, wouldn't they have a key?
Well, again, you would think that... How do you even sleep after that? But
exactly. Yeah. So this next account. I stayed in room 291, and in the middle of my first night while in bed, I became paralyzed by something taking over me. I was physically unable to move in my bed and was shown an image of a female in a white dress with candles on the ground around her, standing in front of a mirror that she was touching. The mirror is what stood out the most to me because even though she was standing in front of it, I could not see her face, and it was disturbing. I finally felt a release and was able to move again, and the vision was gone.
Huh.
And that's from Sonia.
That's kind of spooky.
Very, yeah. And then this last one, I think, is maybe like the weirdest one for me. So this one's from Jules. My fiance and I took a tour of the Banff Springs last fall as we were considering it as a wedding venue. After the official tour from the coordinator, we decided to loop back and explore a little on our own. We were going down the staircase that the bride allegedly fell on, this being the marble one.
Right.
And my fiance was a couple stairs ahead of me, and I overstepped myself and my heels slipped off the stair. I was sure that I was going to fall, and I went to grab onto the closest thing to me and yelped, but before I had a chance to make contact with anything, I felt a pair of arms behind me grab my waist and pull me back onto balance. I was definitely pitched too far forward by that point to correct myself, and the force just seemed to set me back up straight without any overcorrection.
Huh.
So, yeah. Creepy. And,
well, creepy, but mostly friendly.
Yeah. Like, I don't think, besides, like, the family, like, there's nothing really violent in
That's kind of cool.
Which I feel like usually with haunted hotels, there's something bad going on.
No, that's a nice thing to have. Yeah. Helpful staff that decided that they wanted to stay.
Yes, definitely. And also gives a break to the other staff.
Yeah, and the bride. I mean, the bride, I feel bad for, but
definitely.
But she's
helping.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. She's like, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. So some people claim that this hotel is responsible for inspiring The Shining, but. It's more directly inspired by the Stanley Hotel in Colorado, according to Wikipedia.
Yeah.
But it does kind of look like...
Well, the bartender part.
Yeah, the bartender definitely sounds like it. Yeah, but it's when you see pictures of it, it definitely kind of looks a little bit like the hotel from The Shining, especially with the snow.
Yeah.
But I don't think it is technically actually the inspiration. But, you know, lots of ghosts... Mostly friendly, lots of mystery. If you enjoy lots of golf and ghosts, that's the place for you.
Yeah, but if you're American, you can't go to Canada, so oh well.
Well, post-quarantine plans.
Oh, let's just see what happens in November. Then I think we'll see if Canada opens up its doors again. Because, yeah, fair enough.
Anyway, that's the story.
I like that story. No, that was a good one. I like that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Cool, cool, cool.
All right. You have a song, you said, right?
Yes.
Yeah?
I it's not the greatest song, but it's kind of hard to find, like...
Well, I mean, there's a lot of similarities to a lot of stories, so it's hard to, like, yeah. Mm-hmm. I get that.
I think I'm going to use Dance Hall Days.
Ah.
Because of the whole ballroom thing. Yeah. And, yeah. I was trying to think of, like, what had the biggest part of the story, but I feel like it's kind of hard to find something. I don't know.
Well, look for... all. You should also... Oh, I mean, that's a good song. You can also look for something that has a little bit more Canadian bent to it. So you should look at that too. So, but I'm just thinking Gordon Lightfoot or something, but I don't know a song that would make sense. But
that's Canadian?
Gordon Lightfoot is Canadian. He is Canadian. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Neil Young's Canadian too. So.
Wow.
But yeah, well, I like that song. So.
I guess we'll see if I end up going with it.
Fair enough. All right, cool. All right. Well done. All right, so I'm doing true crime.
Cool.
This is a serial killer.
Lovely.
France.
Okay.
Around World War I.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'll start with this. A man was unlucky in love.
Aw.
It wasn't that he couldn't find love. It was more about his loved ones disappearing.
Oh, lovely.
The man was rich, lived in a wonderful estate. And his run of wives wasn't a secret. I mean, people knew. After his seventh wife had been misplaced and didn't seem to be returning, he decided that it was time again for companionship.
Oh my God.
Unfortunately, he was finding it hard to find number eight. But a man with money in those days, well, I guess in all days, has the ability to make things happen. So he set his sights on his closest neighbor. Again, he's on the state, so it's not like they're sharing, you know, a fence or something.
Right.
Well, maybe they are, but, you know, it's probably acres away. And he focuses on the neighbor's two young daughters.
Oh.
So he invites both of them back to his home to basically say, hey, look, I'm just an ordinary dude with a great house, castle, whatever you want to call it, and just bad luck. So over time, the youngest of the two daughters kind of falls under the spell and it's like, yeah, you know, hey, I could do this. And they wed and she lives like a queen. Anything she needs. Well, no matter what. Buying clothes, this, that, waited on, food, not an issue. And she would every once in a while just kind of catch herself thinking about what, you know, previously, like how stupid she was or, you know, for the, to even think this was a problem and, you know, yikes. All's good. And she was, you know, lucky that she had all this. Well, one evening, the man told his wife that he had pressing business and that he would have to, that would take him away for quite some time. So he told her that she should, she had run to the castle.
And are you telling me the story of Bluebeard?
Well, anyway, he...
This isn't true crime, unless it's based on a real story.
So he gave her a set of keys.
Oh my God.
And explained that each open a room for money, jewels, art, heirlooms, weapons, whatever it could be.
I cannot believe you.
And after he finished, there was one key left. It was the smallest. And he said to it, he held his wife's young hands and said, look, this key opens a door that's forbidden to you. If you open that door, you would face the wrath that you'd never seen before.
Yikes.
So he leaves. And of course, her curiosity gets the best of her almost immediately. So she didn't even wait. She opens the door, and what she found caused her to turn as pale as a ghost. And she found?
All the other wives that were dead and bodies and all of that stuff.
A room full of blood to the floor. So yep. It was recessed, pool of blood.
Disgusting.
And somehow the bodies were somehow preserved.
Oh, I didn't read. In the one I read, they were not preserved.
So when she drops the key, though, you know, she gets covered in blood.
Blood.
Right. So she tries to clean it, but
it won't come off.
Uh-huh. Now, her husband unexpectedly returns the next morning.
Yeah.
And he asks for the keys. She hesitates, and he asks her, why are you hesitating? Is there something on one of those keys? Well, finally she gives him the key, and he sees that there's a blood stain on it. And he realizes that she has completely disobeyed him.
Right.
And now her fate would be similar to those of the past wives. And as you've said, it sounds familiar, yes?
Yes. But it's based on a true story?
Well, sometimes truth is stranger than fiction.
Somebody got inspired by it?
Or too similar.
Oh boy.
This is the story of Henri Landru, France's real Bluebeard serial killer.
Gross.
So, my sources.
Man, I was going to tell the story of Bluebeard as my story for one of them, but now I can't do that.
Well, medicalbag.com was, and again, I don't know if this was something they stole, because Wikipedia, there was a lot of similarities, so I don't know which was first. And then All That's Interesting had, you know, a little bit more detailed write-up of the trial. But I'm not going to go into that much detail of the trial. So, let's start.
Okay.
Crime timeline.
Crime timeline.
So, Henri Landru was born on April 12th, 1869, into a modest family. His upbringing, nothing extraordinary, nothing odd, nothing malicious, like no abuse, this, that, or anything like that. He attended church pretty much weekly and participated. Like, he was an altar boy, and then he moved to subdeacon. I don't really know the detail, but I believe he candles, things like that, you know, was pretty prominent in there. And mm-hmm. he was not shy around the ladies. And I guess at the time, this was a position of prestige. So many women would come to church and many women would notice him because he was front and center. Right? So, but he wasn't a man of the cloth or anything like that.
Right.
At 18, he started a relationship with his cousin, Marie Catherine. Yeah, I think at the time this was normal.
Still gross.
And by 1891, so he's now 22 years old, I believe, she was pregnant.
Oh, great.
Now, you know, they weren't married, but so another thing happened. So Henri ended up having to enlist in the French service. It's not like he left her. He just... That was just part of what you had to do as, mm-hmm. I think when you hit a certain age, you had to be in the service. So he supported her though, throughout this, his time in the services, and he rose to the ranks, did very well. And by 1893, he married Marie Catherine and she was already pregnant again with her second child.
Oh my God.
They would have two more children. So four children in total. I don't know how, maybe every couple of years or something. So he... I can't remember what his final title was in the armed services, but when he left the service, he ended up working as a furniture dealer, and also he was like an occasional artist. And I think the dealer he worked with was pretty prominent or was kind of known, and he just was believed that this guy was going to take him under his wing and set him up and teach him the rules of the business and everything else, but set him for a future in this space. Mm-hmm. Somehow things went wrong in the sense that I don't know how it happened, but Henri basically was convinced to give his whatever life savings he had at the time to this dealer, and
the guy
embezzled it, took all his money, and pretty much left him in the lurch penniless.
Right.
So this completely traumatized Henri, and he was more angry at himself as being swindled and couldn't believe that he was such a sucker, stupid, fell for all these things. But it also changed his view of the world to saying that, well, I'd rather be the predator than the prey. So
great.
He decided to start his own cons. And, you know, the boss had left him, you know, there was no way he could trace him or anything like that, but the place was left and the furniture was there and all these other things were still around. So he ended up just taking over that business and decided that his con would be to prey on widows who were trying to sell their furniture. So elderly widows, basically. So this was just a way to find out, like, I could sell your furniture, you have an estate, this or that, but then convince them to
give him a lot more.
Well, yeah, I don't think him money, but, you know, invest in fraudulent things. So he ends up convincing a few of these women to do that. And also during this period of time, I guess if you're going to go bad, go fully bad, he starts having affairs and this and that. I mean, not with these elderly women, but maybe with their daughters or whoever. So, and his wife was fully aware of this going on.
Oh.
However, the cons were pretty short-lived.
Good.
Because I guess, you know, he's just swindling them. Right. He's not killing them. So he ends up going to jail for 2 years. And in that period of time, his wife leaves him, takes children. And when he's released, he has no money, no home, no job. So what does he do?
Starts killing people.
Goes back to the con.
Soon he will start killing people.
Well, and he realized that, well, if I'm going to con this time to not get caught, there can be no witnesses.
Right.
Now, at this point, it was kind of a perfect storm of things happening. The World War I was in full swing. So there were a surplus of widows in France. So he decided to place a Lonely Hearts ad in the paper.
Oh.
And
is he the Lonely Hearts killer or is that someone else?
I don't know. They call him the Bluebeard of France.
So there's multiple of these dudes.
So he decided to target wealthy widows. And he claimed he himself was wealthy, that he had children, which he did, which I believe he ended up using his kids to help with the con.
Great.
And he was just looking for companionship, which was so attractive to women who were widowed in a certain age. So he was focusing between 35 and 43. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how old he was at this time. Well, I guess I could have figured it out. But anyway, but you know, his whole thing was that I can take care of you. I can do these things. I am myself have, just looking for that my next chapter, and you should be in it.
Oh my
God. You know, if you like pina coladas.
Stop.
So his first victim was Jean Couchet. Right. And she owned her own business. Like, I think it was like she milled steel for the war and things like that. Like, I mean,
oh, wow.
And I don't know if it was through her family or her husband, but her husband had died in the war. And she also had a 16-year-old son. So she was older. And Henri had this reputation already of being, you know, this wealthy person, and this persona was there. And also he had a reputation of being, you know, good in bed.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, of course, they hit it off. And throughout this period of time, Couchet actually buys a villa for them to move into.
Jeez.
Kind of remote. And they move in, the whole family. Well, he and the woman, Jean, and her son.
Mm-hmm.
Things are going swimmingly well. Everybody's having fun, this, that. And then in January of 1915, Jean and her son disappear.
Oh, man.
And Henri assumes the Couchet surname. And I don't know what if he changed his first name. But in that period of time, he actually gains 5,000 francs, the Sevilla, and a gold watch.
Oh.
And he gives the watch to his wife.
Okay.
I don't think they actually were divorced.
Oh, wait. So, okay.
I don't think they got... I don't remember if they actually got married either.
That's weird.
But anyway. And I think 5,000 francs is something like $20,000 US dollars at the time, which again, that's a lot in the sense of,
yeah. And it's a lot now too.
No, I think that's what it's worth. I can't remember. I was trying to do the math. I couldn't really find out, but because it's gold and things, it was a pretty decent inheritance stolen money. So now he is living in this villa, has a surname. No one's the wiser. In May of 1915. So January this happened. I don't know how soon they disappear, but in May he decides to place another Lonely Hearts ad.
Mm-hmm.
And he touts that he lives on this villa, this estate. Again, man of good means, just looking for companionship.
Right.
His next mark was a very wealthy woman named Therese Laborde Linlin. And she answers the ad and moves in with him in June. And announces that she is now going to marry Monsieur Couchet to her everyone like that. She disappears days after said wedding.
Oh.
Okay. He liquidates all her assets.
Okay? That's not suspicious at all.
In August, he places another Lonely Hearts ad.
Oh my God.
This time, a Marie-Angelique Guyenne responds, and she disappears weeks after her arrival. Like, no marriage, nothing like that.
Oh my God.
He ends up liquidating her assets, and this was a larger number, I think 12,000 francs. So
at this point, like, I think he's got enough here. Like, he can stop.
I don't know if he had other vices or things like that.
Ugh.
But over the next 4 years, seven more widows would go missing.
Jesus.
A Bertha Hion, she was 55. It was December of 1915 when she, I don't know if she just, that's when she disappeared. I think that's when she got killed. So within that first year, there was four women, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he waits a while, and he then meets a woman, Anna Collum, who is 44. She disappears in December of the following year of 2016. Then an Andrea Babale, young, she was 19. I don't think he killed her for money. I think she was a prostitute or a sex worker, I should say. And this was around 1917. And then Celestine Poussin in September of 1917. She was 47. And she was, she inherited money for family, and she was actually handicapped. And I think she had mental deficiencies. So she was slow, things like that. So, but having anyone pay attention to her, he actually had visited the home. And I believe he used a completely new pseudonym, all right?
Weird.
And the reason I'm going into more detail is that it's her sibling that helps in this later. Then in November of 1917, only 2 months later, a Louisa Jaume, or Louise, I should say, Louise Jaume, 38, she disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And then April of 1918, and Anne Marie, her name, or she went by Annette Pascal, she's 37 as well, disappears as, you know, and I think she actually was a little bit more wealthy than the others. So that was like a big win for him because he gets through till January of 1919.
Right.
Where he meets a Marie Therese Marchandière. So all this is going on. Still in this villa. Nothing. Then in 1919, his luck runs out because.
Good.
Celestine's younger sibling was totally trying to figure out what happened to her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she had met him because he had come to her house. He knew she never liked him to begin with. I can't remember if I have her name. Actually, her name was, I think it was like, it was also, I think it was Marie something. But Marie basically made it her life's goal because she was happy for her sister that she had found love, but she also just thought that this is not right, that kind of thing. So she ended up going to the police, describing who he was, using his pseudonym, but they couldn't find him, and just saying that, look, there's something wrong here. And she knew kind of the area that she was going to go, so they talked about this villa. So finally, police piece this together and end up visiting the villa.
Okay.
See that she... I guess, I don't know if they had a, I don't think she was with him, but basically she confirms that's the guy. Mm-hmm. Different name. And that, of course, raises suspicion.
Right.
So the police then are wondering about the disappearance, start searching the premises, the area, the waterways around, nothing, find nothing. They're dredging ponds. They're looking, they're digging up gardens. They don't find a thing. So investigators did understand, you know, they were suspicious because of the name and things like that. So they decided to do some more research. And as they were, they found these reports that neighbors had filed reports of foul smells emanating from the villa.
Oh, great.
So they went back and started interviewing some more of the these people who had complained about it. And they were just saying that it wasn't all the time. It was just kind of random. And there was also weird smoke, colored smoke coming out of the chimney. So they then searched again, and they searched the furnace stove, and what they found were multiple bones, teeth, hairpins, and other things in the ashes. He was arrested.
Good.
He's brought to trial, and his belief is similar to one of the ones we had in the past, where that the reason why he could get away with this was just the perfect storm of things going on. The war was going on, so all authorities were just focusing on that and just basically dealing with it. His family was involved, and whenever they were trying to search, so maybe there were other inquiries about people disappearing, they helped him get away, kind of thing. They were never charged.
Lovely.
They tried to charge them, but they never had enough evidence. So, and it was more his sons that were involved than his wife, but they helped him hide.
Great.
And then lastly, no one really seemed to care if these women were missing. Again, it's similar to the war. They were just, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So he was of this school. No body, no crime.
But they have bones and teeth.
He pled innocent.
Oh my God.
And he had a story that, you know, what happened to the women, this and that, to the point where he even got to saying that he was the one that was swindled, that they took his money, and then they just would, you know, be jet-setting around the world. So they were alive, and they're
How
just...
How does he explain the stuff they found in his furnace?
He goes, look, I'm a sucker for love, I believe in romance, and, you know, I just...
Oh my God.
When I see somebody who's down, I want to help them, and it's my nature, and I guess I just get taken advantage of.
Yeah, buddy, sure.
But, to your point, the evidence was overwhelming. The financials, he had a record. I mean, he had a book.
And he, like, it liquidates everything as soon as they go missing.
Jewelry, the receipts, They track down the watch to his wife and all these other things, and they all point, of course, to Henri. So the trial actually went on for a month, but he is convicted, and then he is sentenced to death by the guillotine on February 25th, 1922.
I knew he was going to get guillotined.
But it was the crime of the century at the time, right, in France, and it was everything about Bluebeard. They became the story of, you know, the folktale, of course, but then it was to tell folks that, no, this is the real story of Bluebeard, who would go in, basically kill all these wives. So I think he did end up marrying most of the women at some point. Mm. And that's probably how he inherited everything and changed things in will, because, I mean, there's a lot more detail to it. But there's a lot more about the trial on what he was trying to say and all these other things. And he was a very charismatic person, and he could convince a lot of people that, wasn't me. Great. And that's the story of the real Bluebeard of France.
That's very sad that there's a real one.
Well, yeah, I guess. But yeah, there you go. Wow. So I'm going with Owner of a Lonely Heart. That's my song.
That's a good one.
All right. Ready to wrap up?
Yes.
Cool.
All right. So I have three fun facts from Best Life. And this, I've used this list before. This is the one where it's like 150 fun facts to make you go OMG. Okay. So I'll be expecting some OMGs from you. Okay. Are you ready?
From the audience, maybe.
No, from you. No, yeah, you're right here. I think that you can go OMG. I think you can do it. So number one, dolphins have been trained to be used in wars.
I know that one already.
Anyway, they were used largely by the U.S. and the Soviet Union during the Vietnam War and the Cold War. Both countries studied the creatures for their sonar capabilities, but also trained them to detect mines, bring equipment to divers, find lost equipment, and guard submarines, amongst other nifty tricks.
Yep.
No OMG?
No.
Number two. Hot water and cold water sound slightly different when being poured. The heat changes the thickness or viscosity of the water, which changes the pitch of the sound it makes when it's poured. What we feel as heat comes off from the molecules of the water moving faster. Cold water is thicker and therefore makes a slightly higher pitched sound. OMG! Come on, you're missing your cue here. Yeah,
keep going.
This is the last one. I really need a visceral OMG from this one.
All right, well.
For 100 years, maps have shown an island that doesn't exist. Almost nothing is known about Sandy Island, a landmass about the size of Manhattan in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Australia. Supposedly, explorer James Cook discovered it in 1774, and it began appearing on nautical maps in 1908. But it wasn't until 2012 when a team of Australian scientists set out to survey the island that they discovered there was no island there at all. The scientists guessed that Cook may have in fact spotted a pumice raft of floating volcanic stone and gas. The Sydney Morning Herald even published an obituary for Sandy Island.
Okay.
No! A niche! I ask for so little. I just need it. Come on. Come on. No, come on.
Not doing it.
Come on.
No peer pressure here.
The people want you to say OMG.
No, but be a the false
people
one.
People want you to false. Say it.
Let's move on. Maybe next time.
No, maybe next time. Oh my God. You will say it. I'll get you to say it at some point. Okay, well, if you'd like to send in your own fun facts that will make my father say OMG, please do so to our Gmail, which is everythinginpodcast@gmail.com. You can also submit those to our blog / website, which is everythingpodcast.weebly.com. So check those out. We also, if you have like stories that you want to submit or suggestions for stories, please submit those there as well. We would love to hear those. We are on social media. Our Instagram is @everythinginpodcast. Our Twitter is @between_podcast. And we have a Facebook group and page, both with the name of Everything In Between Podcast. So go follow those. We post when new episodes come out, pictures from behind the scenes, pictures about the stories, fun things like that. So check that out. Also, if you are listening on a platform that allows you to do so, please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe. It would be very helpful for us, even though we're kind of, you know, toning down a little bit and going on a hiatus. But it would still be great. We would still appreciate it. So please do that. And lastly, as we were talking about, we pick out songs for each of our episodes that we have compiled into a Spotify playlist called The Soundtrack In Between. So go check that out. Give it a listen. It's very, very relaxing. Some of
it's just good. They're good tunes.
Yeah.
I think.
It's a good mix.
You'll enjoy it.
Yeah. So I think that is it for this week.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Until next week.
Till next week.
Bye.
Bye.